Welcome to another episode of First Off, Let's Kill All the Lawyers. It's that 15th century phrase that Shakespeare wrote and was uttered by Dick the Butcher and drew kind of raucous laughs, even though there's a debate as to what the line meant, and line that still makes people laugh today when we say, First Off, Let's Kill All the Lawyers. So I'm David Heffernan. I've been a personal injury lawyer here in Miami for nearly three decades. And the goal behind this is to introduce you to other local lawyers and talk about various aspects of the law, and maybe one by one, start to take a few lawyers off of that kill list. My guest this morning is a good friend, an avid cyclist who I rarely see in clothes like this, and an excellent lawyer, Karen Gerarden. And Karen, welcome.
Good morning, David.
Good morning. All right, so let's talk about you, because when we talk about local lawyers, you're about as local as it gets, okay? You grew up down here. And then you go to Miami-Dade, and then to FIU, and then to St. Thomas.
That is correct.
But there's a gap in there. So let's talk about that, because before you were a lawyer, you had another life.
I did. Before I was an attorney, I was a practicing sports massage therapist for about 11, 12 years, and I worked on athletes such as yourself.
All right. So how does somebody then go from being a sports massage therapist and everything else to going to law school? Seems to be not a natural transgression, maybe a little, you know, sort of a 180 jump.
That is true. When I was younger, I had intended to go to law school, and then I went out west and I got married and I spent a few years living that life and traveling. And then I ended that and I came back to Miami and I decided, you know, I need to get myself back on track to where I wanted to be in my life. And I went back to school and I continued the education, and that's where it led me today.
All right. So what drew you to law school?
I had always been interested in something that used my mind. I was very happy doing what I was doing, but I didn't feel like it really used my intellectual assets, so to speak. So I really wanted to do that. And I did like the fact that you were able to be involved with people. You were able to help people. And at that point, I just really wanted to become a lawyer, to go out there and make my own business doing that.
And you did, because you didn't come out and start with a firm or anything else. You started your own firm as soon as you got out of law school, right?
I did. I'd always worked for myself. I had the joke that if I worked for anybody, I would probably get fired anyway. So I might as well just make my business. And I have a business degree. So my degree from FIU was in business marketing. So I already had that under my belt. I knew what I needed to do. The marketing is in a complete aspect, because you could be a great lawyer, but running a business is a completely separate endeavor.
It's funny. That's a conversation I have with a lot of friends. And I think it's a deficiency in law school, because I think, yes, they train you to become a lawyer, and there are a lot of great lawyers, but a lot of lawyers don't know how to run a law firm. They don't know the business end of it.
True. A lot of lawyers that come out of law school, they don't necessarily want to run their own business. They do, like, you know, for different reasons, they want to, you know, work where somebody can go in and out and then not have the responsibility of running the business. But for me, I love business. I love running a business. So I knew what to do. And I can tell you, yes, I was working maybe 100 hours a week the first couple of years, you know, moving my own desks, you know, setting up my own accounting. I can't tell you how many Sundays and Saturdays I spent, not only that, learning the law, because you do not have a mentor. You are learning as you go. And it really teaches you the hard lessons that you never forget, you know, especially the first time you go before a court and you don't have somebody telling you what to do. And so you learn, but right, that makes you a better lawyer.
No question. No question. I mean, it's trial by fire, you know?
Yes.
So, all right. So you opened your own firm, and have you always dealt with domestic and divorce and immigration? Is that where the focus started?
No, actually, interestingly enough, in law school, I was more interested in intellectual property law. Okay. I had always been involved in music during my younger life. And so I was geared towards that. And I actually did an internship with Mr. Wolf, who is a very well-renowned intellectual property attorney. And I did an internship there. And I found that I would have had to have joined a law firm to do that. And I wasn't inclined to do that. I actually rented some office space in another attorney's office who is retiring, and it kind of just fell in my lap, believe it or not, where his older clients moving out were family law clients and some immigration clients. And I just took them on and I learned as I went, and I was involved, and it was a good business. And I delved into it, and I found out that I was very good at it.
All right. So let's delve into it. Okay. Because this is one, I think that's always an interesting topic, just because it's either affected everybody personally or affected someone they know. Divorce. I mean, it's, you know, we're over the 50% mark, I think. And most marriages are sort of almost set up to fail as it begins now. So let's talk about divorce law and sort of trends that you see in that. And I want to talk about the pandemic as well and how that's affected it. But what was the appeal of doing domestic work?
Well, domestic work is very personal. I find that I am a very personal attorney. When my clients come to me, I am not afraid to ask them the hard questions. I know what they're going through. I mean, I've been divorced. I have also, my parents were divorced. I know what that's like. And so I really personalize it. And I think the people coming in understand that, that they can tell me what is going on. I'm also a very strong person. When a person comes in and they're not quite sure, I'm able to guide them and let them know that it's okay to tell me those personal things, that I've heard them before and that I can help them. And I think that puts them at ease, and it makes me feel good to be able to do that.
All right. Do you tend to represent more husbands, more wives, or it's whoever comes in? Because I know some lawyers sort of, I don't know that they gear it that way, but it just winds up there. Oh, that's if you're a wife, you should go see this lawyer. You know, if you're a husband, you need to go see this lawyer.
Well, interestingly enough, I have a pretty 50-50 ratio. Some of the trends that I've noticed over the years is that the fathers have been getting more time sharing. You know, right now we started equal time sharing. Before, many years ago, the presumption was that the mother would get the majority time sharing, right, and the father would have to fight for that. Good thing is that now the premise is that it starts at equal. And interestingly enough, I have a lot of fathers who actually have majority time sharing now. So I've noticed that switch, and I'm not sure if it's because of the economics and more women are taking charge and going out there and doing, you know, businesses and work, or I don't know. But I've noticed that shift where the fathers are actually having majority time sharing. But I do represent equally both mothers, fathers, husbands, and wives. I do not have a majority of one or the other.
You're in that delicate balance. You know, there's a thin line between love and hate, you know, for a reason, because things are very passionate either way. And so you see a lot of times in divorce, how do you deal with the aspect of, you know, I want to hurt this person now, you know, in other words, I mean, I want a pound of flesh. And how do you sort of get that separated to say, really, it's a business transaction. We've got to get it boiled down to that.
I think a lot of times it depends on if the representation on the other side is as equally level-headed, because don't forget, there's a lot of moving parts in a divorce. You have your client, you may or may not have children, you have extended family members. If it's a post-modification after a divorce, you might have a new spouse involved. You have opposing counsel, and then you have the judge. So there's a lot of moving parts in a divorce. And you also see people at their very worst. You don't see them at their best. And in order to get them to, how do I say, talk them off the ledge a lot of times,
right,
you really have to take them aside when they get emotional and they get over the top. And you have to look at them and say, if I were to go into court with this, this would not work. This would not fly. You would lose. And I don't want that to happen to you. So take a step back. Take 3 deep breaths.
Right.
And let's do it together. And I've actually done that with my clients. And let's think about what you're saying. So I think that helps. And I think having the background that I have in doing even the therapy and allowing people to just take their moment and then move on from there is really helpful in divorce, because it's so emotional and it feels like the bottom is dropping out. And I have to tell them the bottom is not dropping out. It may feel like that, but it will come back.
Right. Okay. How do you deal with the delicacy of when you have kids involved? I mean, that's I think, the most difficult. And we often see it portrayed the kids sort of become pawns, you know, and they're used as weapons toward the other spouse. So how do you kind of try to neutralize that and try to protect particularly young children in what's an extraordinarily stressful situation?
Yeah, that is an extraordinarily stressful situation for both parents. I think the most important thing that I have to look at is what is in the best interest of the child. And that is the standard that the courts look at. And at a certain point, the judge or whoever is administering the law over that case will look at both parents and say, I really don't care. I'm thinking of your child. So again, I try to step back and I try to look at that parent if I represent them. And I say, you know, is this good for your child? You know, maybe the other person isn't an ogre or maybe the person is. And you do have to step in and file an emergency motion and protect that child, which is often the case. So at each part of the case, whether you're doing the analysis or whether you're actually in the case, you have to remind your client, you know, are you being over the top? You know, is the judge maybe going to admonish you and say, you know, ma'am or sir, this is not in the best interest of your child. The other parent should have time sharing or otherwise. And I think you have to walk them back from that and remind them of what is going on.
Okay. We went through and it was a great meme I saw yesterday. It's a guy running and he says, me still processing 2020. And there's a guy right behind him that says 2022, just 4 months away. You know, we sort of went through 2020 in this pandemic and into 2021, and it's all kind of been a blur, but, and we've seen a lot of different aspects. Obviously, bankruptcies have skyrocketed and everything else. But what about the impact on divorce when you've got people now sequestered, you're in lockdown, things like that? What have you seen as far as trends going in divorce?
Well, real briefly, I'll take everyone back to that time. You know, we're used to going into court. We're used to representing our clients in front of the judge.
Right.
The lawyers, the judges, and the whole system were shut down. We had to learn how to do Zoom. We had to learn how to present our evidence. I'm also a certified family law mediator, and we were learning how to do mediations via Zoom. You know, life didn't stop. So I can commend the court system in Miami-Dade County because they did come up to speed, and
right,
they were exceptional. So that being said, during that time frame, as far as the family matters were concerned, if the parties were already separated and divorced, we had the time sharing issues of, you know, who was going to have them during the pandemic. Some parents could agree and some parents couldn't. During that time, we did the best we could. I mean, there was a point in time where some parents did not see their child for a portion of time, whether the parent was sick and the other parent was healthy,
right,
or whether the child was sick or not in school and had to be homeschooled. Yes, it was pandemonium, if I can, you know, use that word, but it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. We controlled it. People were dealing with a lot and they were trying to work together at that time.
Yeah, we've talked about it in some other shows, and I really do think that the judiciary for Miami-Dade was out in front. They quickly went to Zoom. They went for different. They were trying different ways to have jury trials, and always, and surprisingly, you know, at least in the civil end of things, were able to continue to move cases. And so, you know, a lot to be said about that. And we're far from it yet. I mean, unfortunately now, you know, yes, we sort of reopened the courthouse, except now they've condemned the courthouse because it's falling down and it's an unsafe building. So, you know, we have judges ready to work and lawyers ready to work. We just don't have a courtroom to go to anymore for a while.
Yeah, I have to tell you, the funny story is that everybody knows what dogs they have now. Because, you know, you're in a courtroom and you think it's a courtroom, but actually it's the backdrop of the judge in the
right
courtroom. And then your dog barks and then their dog barks. And then before you know it, you're showing everybody your dog. So it's actually personalized people in a way that I don't think would have happened before. It's made us kind of realize that although we are judges, we are attorneys, you know, we are even the litigants, you know, we all have lives and we all, you know, are people. We shouldn't be feared as much. And I think one thing the pandemic did positively was bring that out more. And you know, I now know what judges' dogs are looking like, and it's personal.
So, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I had a young lawyer and got to know her and we're taking the deposition and, you know, she's homeschooling kids and this, not, and I said, you know, how you doing? She said, well, I'm failing first grade virtually, but I'm doing okay in third grade because she's trying to practice law. She's trying to keep both her kids in front of their computers while they do it. So it's been an incredible strain, but I think it's a testament to, again, the human nature and the ability to adapt to these things. And I think the legal community has done a good job with that. And,
yes.
But yeah, so I've met lots of kids and dogs that I didn't know they had.
Exactly. Exactly. I think one of the things that people forget is that during the process of divorce, that both people have feelings and emotions, and that the lawyers also have feelings and emotions. And also, you know, we're dealing with a lot of plates in the air that they don't realize, because I understand they're encapsulating what they're going through. And so I try to explain to them how the system works. And I think that's important for people to know how the system works. I mean, so many times I have a client that maybe had a prior lawyer, and they said, I walked into court and I had no idea what was going on. I had no idea why I was there. I had no idea, you know. And so it's really incumbent upon us, as specifically family law attorneys, when there are emotions and there are children, there are properties involved, their life savings practically sometimes, is that you break it down. I'm going in for this reason. This is what's expected of you. This is what you need to know. This is how you need to prepare. And that's really important, because you're nervous. The client, no, I'm not nervous, but the client's nervous. Right. They don't know what's going to be asked of them. If it's a trial and there's cross-examination, you know, you need to prepare your client to be bombarded maybe with unpleasantries. So I think it's important for the lawyer to prepare your client, to also know that there's mediation available, which is a wonderful tool. I mean, as a mediator, I try to always support that and say mediation is a tool that can alleviate not only the cost, which is a high cost,
right,
to divorce or any part of the family law process. You know, it's not insurance related. We can't take a settlement. It is basically out of your pocket or out of the other party's pocket. So it's important to know you have to find other ways to solve the problem, and that this is a bubble in time of your life. It is not your whole life. That this too shall pass, and that you can go on. So do the least amount of damage to yourself and to others during the process.
It was one of my favorite bumper stickers years ago, and it's a little dated, but years ago, bumper sticker said, love is grand, divorce is 50 grand. So, you know, it is an expensive process. One of the things that I had read articles about and would like your thoughts on is the collaborative process now. Is that something you see that's going on, and can you explain how that works?
Okay, I have thoughts about the collaborative process. I'm hopeful, but in the end, it can start a collaborative, and then it typically doesn't end in a collaborative fashion. And then the collaborative lawyer has to withdraw. That's part of the process if you enter into collaborative agreement for that type of dissolution of marriage. It typically, in my experience, has not worked. Okay. That's just my experience.
It is an interesting concept to me, because as you alluded to, so you can hire a lawyer, both sides can have lawyers, but those lawyers have to agree that they won't go on with litigation if you can't deal and resolve it through the collaborative process. So in theory, it sounds good, but you're saying...
I'm saying if you have an agreement with your party, just get a lawyer and have an agreement and do the case. I mean, you don't really need to go through all the collaborative process. And that's just, again, not taking away from collaborative attorneys or their process, but that's something that works in their system. But from my, you know, 23 years of being an attorney in family law, I have found that if you do have an amicable divorce, just create a settlement agreement.
Right.
Go through the easy process, and then it's done. Because at that point, if you do have that and it does fall by the wayside, you keep your attorney,
right. You
then it becomes litigant, and then you move on. It's, you don't have to start all
it's
over
It's not a
again.
Restart, right?
Right.
Right. Okay. So we talk about divorce. Let's talk about the byproducts of divorce. The other aspects of domestic law. And I'm sure the pandemic has had a big effect on this. People lose their jobs, or people are now working at home, or they're not making as much money, or they voluntarily changed and did something during the pandemic. How does that all get affected, and what happens then to the agreements that are in place?
Yes, modification, I would say, is a substantial part of my practice. And for the viewers, a modification is when you have maybe a final judgment of divorce and a marital settlement agreement or a mediated settlement agreement, and through substantial changes, there needs to be a post-modification of that agreement so that you can start from a different point in place of your life. And there has been many of that, a lot of that going on now. What happens with that is if somebody has lost their job and it's long-term, then we have to go back in and assess, is this long-term? Was it voluntary? Was it involuntary? So there's a lot of parts that go into it. Also, did one party have to remove a child from school for various reasons? And then do we have to modify where that child now is going to school if there's no agreement, or if one party was forced to move? So the modifications can be just as difficult as the actual divorce sometimes. It's another process, very similar to the actual beginning of the divorce, except now you have to show why things have changed. But I encourage people to do a modification, because if it's not working and your child is 5 or 6, you've got a lot of years to deal with that the way it is if it's not working. So go ahead and make that move if you need to.
What about other aspects of things? Custody battles that arise maybe after the divorce. So, you know, we're going to share custody or whatnot, but then there's now accusations against one spouse with that child. How does that all get impacted, and how do parties deal with that?
Very, very difficultly.
I'm sure.
it's one of those cases and one of these areas of family law that has to be tread on very carefully. The allegations are serious. You know, a lot of people get angry, especially with domestic violence. You know, people make accusations because they didn't get what they wanted, or, you know, it did happen. So, right. You know, you really have to vet them, and you really have to question your client. You have to know that what you're doing is something that you feel is not frivolous to the court. And I think that's important for the attorney to make sure that you talk to your client, you find out if this is correct, because it does have an impact on the other party's job, on their livelihood, on their time sharing. And I speak to other lawyers when I say that, not only the clients, that you have to be realistic and not make false allegations. That being said, as far as a child custody, you do have to, again, make sure that the best interests of the child are front center. And that's what the court looks at. So you want to make sure you pick that apart as well, because you don't want the person to go forward and perhaps jeopardize what they have in their current time sharing if they're unreasonable, because the judges don't look kindly on that.
Right.
So we want to make sure our client has a reality check while we go through the process. If it is realistic and it is something that should be done, then we go forward. We file our petition for modification. We set it before the court, and we have a litigation if we have to, or a modification through mediation. So it's another portion of a whole new case, basically. I deal a lot with military law. My office is south, so I'm very close to the airbase. And the relocation is a lot. You know, we do a lot of relocation cases, and that has a whole different structure of law that you have to attach to it. So again, you have to make sure your client has a realistic expectation of what will occur and explain to them. And if they have all the criteria, then you move forward with it.
So you say military law, is that separate and distinct? I mean, they have their own body of law that controls?
In many aspects, they do.
Okay.
Not all, but in many, they do. There are specific provisions that deal only with military divorce, regarding pensions, regarding, you know, insurance, regarding relocation. I've represented people who've been overseas in Japan. I've done trials via Zoom, you know, where people are in other countries.
Right.
So the whole relocation process may be a little different with that and other aspects. It's still a divorce, but they're just some different legal ramifications for that, and actually different laws that come into play.
Interesting. All right. So what advice do you have for people that are contemplating divorce?
Well, I always like to say I'm a big believer in marriage, and I'm a big believer in divorce. You know, marriage, again, I have to remind people, marriage is a contract. You know, people don't like prenuptials, but I say, when you say I do, you've entered into a prenuptial dictated by the laws of the state of Florida.
Well, that's true. That's an interesting point.
And you have already, without knowing, entered into a prenuptial agreement.
Right.
So if you want to get really romantic, draft your own prenuptial vows.
Right.
People don't know that. So what I'm saying about family law and divorce in general is, you know, try to go to counseling. I'm a big believer in marriage counseling if there's no domestic violence involved and anything of that was serious in nature. And try to see if you can work that out. If you can't, then find the right lawyer. You know, make sure that it's explained to you. Divorce is a personal matter. I mean, my life will go on. It's your life.
Right.
So you have to like your attorney. You have to trust your attorney. You have to feel like you're being represented. And divorce should be contemplated very seriously on behalf of the children, but go for it if you feel like this marriage is not working for you. And it's an emotional business, as I like to call it. It is two people coming into partnership, and in various degrees, whether it's financial, whether it's emotional, whether it's childcare. And once you separate, your life is different. So prepare yourself for that and set your ducks in a row and be honest about it. Don't try to manipulate the process, because in the end, it all comes out in the wash. So make it simple, right. Make it straightforward. You know, this is your child. This is somebody that you loved in the past and now you don't, but okay, let's be human. That's why I try to tell my clients.
Well, and it's good advice. And I do the same, obviously, in personal injury, people are dealing with tragedy or wrongful death cases, is find a lawyer that you can have a relationship with, because it's going to be a long-term relationship. I mean, these, you know, it's not, okay, here, bam, you know, file three things. I'll see you. We'll have a phone call. That'll be it. It's a long, most times pretty drawn out litigious process. And so having somebody that you can communicate with, that you're comfortable with, I think is extraordinarily important when they pick a lawyer. And let's talk about one other aspect, because you said you're a certified mediator. Okay. I'm a big proponent of mediation. We had Stan Blake on a few weeks ago, who was one of my favorite people, but you know, one of the top circuit court judges for so many years. And now he's a fantastic mediator. I've used him, and he just brings that whole skill set to it. And it is amazing sometimes how cases you think really have no shot of getting resolved, but you get everybody in the same room virtually or otherwise, and things happen. So in the divorce context, talk about those mediations.
In the divorce context, being a mediator, it's a very active process, especially via Zoom.
Right.
You have to be a technological wizard at best. But in general, mediation is, you really, as a mediator standpoint, you have to listen and you have to, again, manage people's expectations. It's a confidential process. So you have to be very wary going from one side to another. If you're in a caucus, which means that you're with one separate party and their attorney or loan, dealing with that. So it's a respectful process. And that is the one main component that I start with in my mediations. It is a respectful process. And it's here as an opportunity for both of you to maybe take a step back and realize that in the end, you don't have control if you go before the judge. And right now you have control. So let's manage those expectations and let's get forward a plan that both can be workable for both parties. You have to move each other to the middle as best as you can. And again, as you know, everybody says a mediation is successful when neither party is happy.
Right. Nobody's happy at the end.
So, and then again, the confidential process is definitely at play. Mediation, it can take hours. It can take 2 hours. It can take 10 hours. And again, I think the most important thing as a mediator is to be confident in yourself and what you're proponing to each party, and also being secure that the people know that what they're telling you is definitely not spoken about unless you give consent.
Right.
And that you can go to the other party and let them know if you just cannot agree, then we can agree partially on certain issues, especially family law. You can have child time sharing agreed upon, but not property division or equitable distribution agreed upon.
Sure.
So in family law, we can bifurcate things and a portion of it have it agreed to and a portion of it go before the court. So that's important to know. If you're a little hesitant, you have control and you can do this in different ways. And that's, as far as mediation is concerned, I think I really very, you know, think it's a great, great part of divorce law and an opportunity for people to settle their case.
Well, there you go. One more, hopefully, that we can take off the kill list. Karen, it's really been a pleasure. It's an area of law that I know little or nothing about, but is so critical, as I said, because we all know either direct close impact, a family member, friends, and I get calls all the time, you know, hey, I'm thinking about getting divorced. Who do I talk, you know, and finding that right lawyer, I think is critical. So hopefully that's one we can take off the kill list. Next time I see you, probably in cycling gear and we'll be out in the heat somewhere, but pleasure to see you in this environment. Hope you all enjoyed it, and we'll be back next week with another episode of First Off, Let's Kill All the Lawyers.